Hello, everyone. Welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on July 20th, 2016. Myrot here alongside Rollo T. Chris, how are you doing with your heavenly white glow around you?
Well, it was a lot more fitting just a day or so ago when life was going well. It's been a tumultuous week, Nick. Real rise and fall, you could say. And I don't know if the show's ever really going to be the same. I unfortunately became a gym leader and accomplished a lifelong dream in Pokemon Go.
So you're just going to go on to the next life now. You've got nothing more to accomplish.
Well, I felt like this is what I was meant to do. Like, all those years playing Pokemon have led to this moment where I took over, I don't know, some dive bar that was on my watch.
We need like, low dramatic triumphant music playing at this
point. It needs to be like Locke's music from Lost, where it's like, for a hot moment it's triumphant, but then it's just bitter and sad because that's the rest of his life. I didn't even have that gym for 24 hours, Nick. I came into work the next day, someone had already taken it, and clearly had taken it and just thrown garbage in its place. They're like, I don't even really want this, so here's like a level 12 Pidgey, just fucking whatever. And just be like, why do I bother? I don't know. It was a lot of responsibility. And I feel like I'm kind of glad to have it off my shoulders. But at the same time, I was really invested in turning the city around, Nick. I was going to make Harrisburg a place to go to. You know, like the future from the city that's at the Epcot Center, I think. I don't actually know if I've ever been to Disneyland. My parents did love me. I was going to make Harrisburg into that city of the future. All based around this one gym downtown that no one went to. But that's over now.
Well, you know, if it's any consolation, Chris, the fact that you were invested in your community and wanted to use the gym to make your town a better place, that means that you're a better gym leader than Volkner, who was just a bored asshole who didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to throw everybody out of the bar. Because it's mine now. I took it over in Pokemon Go,
right, so it's mine. Right.
And I was going to open an inner-city boxing school, kind of like Cuddy did in Season 4 of The Wire. Except I don't know how to fight at all, so it'd be a lot of me like, alright, so here's what I remember from Holy Land.
And a lot of this can't actually be applied in a boxing match.
Yeah. But here, let me tell you what to do if someone comes at you with a knife. And just apply that to as if they didn't have a knife, and you're in a sanctioned fight where kicking them in the dick gets you disqualified. But it's lost now. I guess I'll just start throwing weed seeds around, like all around, like dandelion seeds on the grass everywhere. I'm just like, fuck this city. Fuck everything about it.
If I can't help this city, then I'll destroy it.
Yeah,
very slowly.
If I can't have this city, no one will. I'm already wearing white. I was about to be like, I could just become Kingpin if I really wanted to.
We just have to speak it in a very...
Yeah, I just need to be...
restrained manner.
Very elegant and restrained, as if I'm really chewing on every word before I say it.
As many layers as I put on top of it, I'm really a violent psychopath.
Just to...
cultured.
Yes. Sophisticated.
We gotta
fucking
do.
Fucking love Kingpin.
We gotta do Kingpin as one of our voices. Yeah, it's a good one. I like doing Kingpin.
I'll have to find someone who fits it, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm just very angry at Viz because I can't get their stupid reader to get any bigger now.
Did you get a response from their?
I did get a response. They said, no, there is no way to make it bigger.
Aw, that's
it's like,
fun.
You guys are fucking useless. I love you, Shams. Make it better. Fortunately, I have discovered, because their only advice was, you can make it full screen. It was like, I fucking know. Fortunately, that still leaves the Skype window there. So, and also, my, what do you call it? My taskbar, it leaves it there. So, it's not as bad as I thought it would be having to be full screen. Anyway, we've got manga to talk about.
Just a couple manga.
Just a little bit of manga.
Just a Susan of manga.
Right, what that word is.
I think it's French for appetizer or something like that. I've heard it used a lot.
Fair enough. So, we're going to start things up with Black Clover. It's the indie recap portion, weekly manga recap.
Alright, well, now's your chance, Nick. Annalisa isn't in the chat room right now, so if you need to shit all over Black Clover, now's the time to do it, because she can't get angry at you in the moment.
I have mixed feelings about this chapter.
Well, maybe that's still for the best, then.
Yeah. It's page 70, Despair versus Hope. Black Clover, this chapter stars Asta, Yami, Noelle, Beto, and Yuno!
I love it.
Finral and Elizabeth? Nah. Or not Elizabeth.
Vanessa.
Elizabeth's not in... Who the fuck is Elizabeth? Is there an Elizabeth in... There might be.
There was an Elizabeth in Seven Deadly Sins. I don't know if that's your thing. That's the only Elizabeth I can think of in manga right now.
Because I was like, is that Rebecca? Is that... Who am I thinking?
I was like going over my thoughts on this chapter a couple times, and like seven times in a row... I thought Vanessa's name was Rebecca. And I was like, I know that's not right, but it's like Rebecca.
It's not an important character.
Yeah, I was like, because this is an important character, as opposed to Rebecca, who's never going to be an important character. So we didn't remember her name, though.
Sidebar, both Annalisa and I were sent by Carito Prime. He's apparently been working on... not Carito Prime. That was the one who sent us the recommendation we're working on. Lucky Swordsman apparently decided to make those Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan cards, because they're at the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card generator things that you can do. Mm-hmm. He apparently has made an archetype for the Blackpools, which I imagine is a spin-off of the conversation. That wasn't a conversation. I did all the talking. That question that I answered about what Yu-Gi-Oh! Decks people would use. And you were like, I don't know. And I was like, well.
I was like, a warrior deck? Yeah, a time wizard deck?
And what do we use a time wizard deck, Chris?
See, that's the thing. I only like remember Yu-Gi-Oh! At the point where archetypes were just the monster type. It was like, fucking Bandicoot's like, I have a machine deck. I'm like, I can do that.
That's not an archetype at all. An archetype is contained in the name of the card.
Yeah, I don't know. Shit out of luck on that.
Yeah. Anyhow, get a little cover page. Asta looking up the Magic Kingdom Palace thing, I guess.
I do kind of like the pose, though.
It's a cool pose. It looks like something from a title sequence.
Yeah.
It starts off with like a sunrise or something like that. Asta, you know, going up, and then it goes up into the sky, and then you get the title.
Yeah, that's like the final shot of the fucking anime. Like the song's just saying "Da song Dumbass." It's like pulling back at his like from behind.
The entire rest of it is just shots of Yuno.
Yeah, it's just him like. But like while crazy shit's happening around, like explosions, like the shark attack.
Just looking bored over everything.
Picking his nose every so often.
Last time on Black Clover. Asta and Finral and Vanessa all managed to work together in order to land a critical hit on Beto. Beto, not going down yet. He's just kind of bleeding from the mouth as he takes a swipe at Asta, but Vanessa manages to tug him to safety.
Yeah, I bet she does.
I
mean, come on, you can't use the word tug as a verb without it becoming sexual.
Probably not. There's a one bit that really distracted me the first time I was reading through this, where Asta says, thanks, you know, for giving me your safety, but he says it as thank you, where you is spelled Y-E-W.
Yeah, I was like, is this some kind of wood pun I'm not supposed to, like, I'm not getting? I guess it's just supposed to, I guess Asta might, he might just have a little bit of an accent, is what they're kind of getting at. Like, thank you! But I don't know why he sounds like Medea, because that's what it definitely sounded like when I tried to do it. Like, thank you!
They have a little bit of a standoff in Break the Battle. Beto tries to heal himself again, but because he was struck by Asta's magic canceling sword, he can't. And so he's thinking to himself, oh, this is a real annoyance. We've got, you know, these two guys giving this kid really good mobility. There's the spatial magic user, and then there's that one with his thread magic. He's got threads going every goddamn where. They don't affect me personally, but she can just pull this kid to wherever he needs to go, and he'll hit me with that stupid fucking sword. I'm going to kill them. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, he does. He's angry. Which is kind of weird, because the way they somewhat set the Eye of the Midnight Sun, I believe the group's called, the way they sort of set them up is that they're almost like the persecuted ones. Because that was whole, like, Leash's whole shtick was like, no, like, I can't believe they hurt you. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure you're safe. And we get a little bit of that from Veto, where it's like, yeah, my family's weird. But he definitely, like, very quickly is just like, I'm going to murder all of you and eat your bones!
Well, if Noelle is...
You're a lot less sympathetic.
If Noelle's analysis of the third eye thing is any indication, it might be some sort of demonic influence over him that's making him go extra berserk. I don't know.
Sure.
And he's also calling them all humans, so I think that that might be an indication of that. Vanessa realizes that Veto is not going to get caught off guard anymore, so they need to increase the speed that they're going at. And so she and Finral are really straining and pushing themselves in order to get Asta to zip all around the battlefield, fling him through the air, and in between a whole bunch of portals as quickly as they possibly can. And while this is going on, we get a little bit of backstory, as Finral and Vanessa talk about how great and inspirational Asta is. This is my big... God damn it. I hate Asta. She's part of the chapter discussion this week.
I feel like we need a theme song for this. Like, it's like, comes in like, Nick doesn't like Asta, but that's the shit because he's everywhere. Bam, bam, for now.
Oh, Black Clover is a pretty cool series, except for the main character who's in every chapter, so shit. Beep.
Someone make that a theme song and send it to us.
We've got people listening to the podcast who know how to make music. Go on.
Yeah,
I'll have to get the shit out of those two verses we did. Unbreakable. They live, damn it. And now jump's not loading for me. Great.
Oh, no.
Okay. There we go. So we get a little bit of backstory from Vanessa and Finral. Vanessa, not a whole lot. We just get a shot of her, like, haunted-ass Halloween town home. And she wears a witch's hat. Like, come on.
Well, yeah, I guess it makes sense. They definitely leave that vague, I'm assuming, because it's something that's meant to be visited again later on.
Mm-hmm.
But Finral, we get just outright, essentially, his shit.
Finral made out to be a much more dramatic character than first anticipated.
Yeah, remember the joke that we always had was that he was, like, for some reason, he just fucked up on his, like, original application day and just got sent to the Black Bulls, and he's the only, like... he's the only normal person in the Guild of Freaks. Turns out he actually does belong here, and it's really sad as to why.
Yeah.
Now I feel like an asshole.
He remembers when he was a kid. He came from... He's Sanji, okay? Like... He came from this the House of Vod, a family of offensive spatial magic users who have been active as magic knights for generations. Look at how awesome your little brother is, and how look at Langris, he's outperforming you in spades. Why aren't you fighting with your magic? And Finral's reply was, I don't want to be violent or have people get violent with me. Oh, you spineless oaf! It's just kind of bad timing, because the other super famous series about a bunch of misfits with a perverted character turns out came from a prestigious family of assassins who would have no qualms about killing people. So, look, it's archetypes, but it's timing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I'm saying, is it's timing. We just learned all this stuff about Sanji. We just learned all this stuff about Finral.
The notion of offensive spatial magic, though, is super awesome to me. It's essentially a family of people who have the fucking power of the hand from JoJo Part 4, where it's just like, I'm just gonna erase whatever's in front of me.
Well, it makes sense, because if I don't know exactly how they're manipulating it, but if you assume it to be like, oh, you take something and put it somewhere else, if you don't transport all of something, that can really hurt. So,
yeah. I mean, it looks brutal. You just see a shot of, like, one of the blocks that's just been, like, reduced to, like, just a small curve now. It's just like, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And we get a little bit of a time skip within the flashback as Fenrir, now that he's part of the Magic Knights, he's being scolded by, looks like, his father, saying, you know, Langris is now the vice captain of the Golden Dawn. Well, you're just the pack mule for the weakest brigade, the Black Bulls. We're appointing Langris as the next head of the House of Vaud.
That's a pretty big deal, because the Golden Dawn's the big group.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out he's their second in command to obviously a villain mask guy. So it seems as though we might have some sort of confrontation between Fenrir and his brother at some point. I like that.
$5 says it happens next week, Nick.
Oh my god. It's like Veto's face falls away. It's, it's really my brother Langris.
Spatial magic duel loses immediately. Like, oh, I'm just like, damn it, Black Clover, you did it to me again. You sucked me in and you fucked me over again. So it's like, did you ever watch that Robot Chicken episode where they're doing, like, the Roland Emmerich Godzilla movie? It's like, we paid you $60 million to make a Godzilla movie, and you gave us a steamy pile of shit! Again!
Oh, God. Boy. So, Fenrir has a moment of reflection within this flashback. He's thinking about, I ran away from my parents, I ran from my little brother, I ran from my house and from reality. I figured those who had the most fun in life won. So I gave up on devoting myself to anything and just lived for the moment. In the midst of that, Asta, I met you. I'm sorry, I'm so sick of this. But I like the rest of it, because he thinks about a conversation he had with Yami at one point, when he asked, why did you have me join your brigade when I can't attack people? And he says, my idea is that you would take me places.
He's honest.
But then he went on to say, well, you've got your own way of fighting too, don't you? And Fenrir now is thinking to himself, I don't have to become the strongest. I'll make the Black Bulls the strongest brigade. That's really cool.
Spoken like a true support.
Yeah.
And Asta is the carry, who's like, I need more kills!
Heals, please! Soda, WTF.
Fuck, get back to lane. Mid, where are you?
Oh, God. Why did no one warn me there was a gank coming?
Dude already has ult, what the fuck, mid?
Oh, God, stop feeding.
It just so happens that Asta is the hard counter to every other pick.
Basically. Asta flips around everywhere, darting everywhere around Veto, but he is observing, you guys must be really close to breaking down. If one of you makes even the smallest mistake, you're dead, and your magic can't possibly hold up much longer. But Fenrir and Vanessa just stay determined, and they're thinking to themselves, well, Asta is completely trusting in us, and we can't betray that trust. So we've got to do this properly. And Veto suddenly just goes, hurry up and despair already!
Come on! Despair!
Why aren't you? I worked really hard to make you despair, but you're still not doing it!
Oh, feel bad! Come on! I'll be your friend!
And Asta says, I don't have time for that crap. And he frickin' shish kebabs.
He's like, hope you didn't need your kidneys. How fucking meta would that be if that was his line at the end?
Remember a few, like a couple of months back, we observed how whenever Asta hit someone with his sword, it seemed like he wasn't really striking a killing blow. It was like he was hurting them with the sword or bludgeoning them with the cleaver. So much for that.
Yeah. I guess every so often he just fucking skewers a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Like I said, I have mixed feelings about this chapter. Objectively, I think it's a really good chapter. There's fast-paced action. It's cool just to see the three of them working together. The final shot of Asta getting Veto with his sword is really cool. I like the backstory that we get from Fenril. I really like it. I'm just so sick of, like, this series is going to be ruined for me. I'm never going to be able to enjoy this fully until I can actually get past how much I hate how important Asta is to every single person in this series. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be able to get past it and enjoy it at this rate.
I like this chapter, and I completely understand your issue with it, and I have it to a smaller degree. Eventually, I can only make the same argument for so long before I kind of just learn to accept it. Like, I can't every week be like, Bleach, why didn't the Quincy's have, like, they definitely feel like they should be fine, like, angrier about the whole genocide thing. Eventually, I just had to kind of let it go, and that's what I'm kind of doing a bit with the Asta thing. I do agree he's a little bit forced in this chapter, but at least it's a chapter about the other characters doing something and being active, and it's not a situation where they're just like, we all believe in Asta because he's the best. It's like them working together, and I love what they did with Fenril. Not just that they gave him a backstory, but that they worked in his personality into it. Like, the reason he's such a skirt chaser is because that's what his life had become once he thought there was no real direction for him, so he just wanted to enjoy what little part of life he had left. So it's kind of tragic, but it's, you know, you see the motivation there, and you understand why he's in the Black Bulls, and, you know, they obviously are teasing something to Vanessa, too, so I think both of these characters are now a lot more interesting, a lot more admirable, and it actually makes the Black Bulls an interesting group. It's an issue I've had with Fairy Tail for a long time, where I don't care about Fairy Tail the Guild, because the Guild's stupid. I don't care. There's 1,000 members, 90% of them are worthless.
It's essentially five
characters who are important in that.
Because it's like, okay, you've got your A team, you got Natsu, you got Gray and Lucy and Happy and Urza. Then you got your B team, you got Kikijio, you got Levy.
Wendy's on the A team as well.
Wendy, I forgot about Wendy. I just completely forgot her. And then you've got the Strausses, who are supposed to be important, but aren't really. And then you've got fucking Kana, Makarov, Mavis, and all the ones whose names you can't be bothered to remember.
Yeah, Levy's former friends, who used to be a three-man team.
There are so many of that fall into that last category of don't even know their name, because fuck it.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Evergreen, maybe, I remember, because she's got a thing with Elfman, but that's... You know.
Congratulations, you hitched that. You hitched yourself to the rocket to fucking popularity town, didn't you?
There's that cowboy girl with the kid and her husband.
She's never going to be anything but Sniper Girl to me. Cowboy right. girl, cowboy wife, cowboy mom, whatever adjective I need to use at the time. So I like that the Black Bulls right now are actually starting to feel more developed, more fleshed out, more distinct, and their issues, the things that make them social rejects, are starting to become more clear. Because that's another issue I have with Fairy Tail, where eventually I'm just like, I don't understand why people don't like you, because everyone else in this world seems stupid and crazy. Like, when you look at the Black Bulls, you're like, yeah, I guess this really is like a group of kind of weird people. So I like it for that. I like the action to it. There's some stuff that are kind of rough. Some of the dialogue's a little beyond cheesy. Like the, believe in me, trust in Jim. Sorry, I can't believe in you, because I already believe in you 100%. I'm just like, oh, fuck you. Fuck you. My mom had a stroke. There shouldn't be this kind of positivity in the world.
God.
I lost that innocence so goddamn long ago. I can't stand you, Asta.
It would be a little different if Asta, like, just... He's kind of missing something that makes me buy into him as, an inspirational figure. You know?
We haven't yet seen the adversity he's had to overcome. We've been told it. Like, we know he grew up poor, but it still seems like he grew up relatively in a good environment with people, like, a family, essentially. So it's like, I'm waiting to get that thing that... It's like, oh, wow, he's so positive despite all of that. then maybe it might be a different scenario. But it at times it really just feels like, fuck you, god damn it. A Sesame Street nonsense, I can't... Someone kill someone in front of this kid! Make him see the world!
It's like booking Roman Reigns as your underdog.
Yeah, you're like, oh man, life must have been so tough for you.
Being incredibly handsome and athletic.
Super tall.
Related to The Rock.
Hunky, yeah. Born into, like, the... Maybe, like, the second biggest wrestling family still alive, basically. So, yeah, I still like this chapter. I think a lot of it, it's cool. And I think it's a really effective, like, conclusion. I could see all the issues with it, but I really like seeing them work together and then having that kind of end result not just be Asta believed really hard, it was the team pulled it together.
Basically, I had to say I have mixed feelings on this, and they are entirely my bias against Black Clover because of Asta Ass' hang-ups on it. It is, I think, a really good chapter, aside from that. Let's move on to not a great chapter. Bleach! 682.
You know what? I might have to fight you, Nick. I think this is an amazing chapter.
So, two chapters ago, we had the end. Then we had the end to world. And now we have the two-sided world end. It's just going to be some sort of weird mix of every combination of the words two, world, and end, I think, from here on out. So,
end world, two-side world, two. The,
exactly.
You're just like, you added a bunch of words twice.
Because it's two.
Yeah, oh my god, that would be such a Koopa thing to do.
So, Eobach emerges from the other side of the portal. Turns out he went down to the remains of the Soul Society. Not sure what he's planning to do down here, exactly. Maybe he's just gonna...
I'm traveling downhill to finish up my fight with Aizen, as you know. But you weren't in a fight with Aizen. Yeah, but you knew what was going to happen, so I'm just expediting the process.
It's one of those things. It's like when Aizen had gone into Karakura Town. And it was just like, I will follow these unimportant teenagers around very slowly instead of doing whatever my actual goal is. So Eobach shows up and he says, I did not expect to see you again. And Aizen's there with his chair. And Aizen, really big in his britches, just goes, welcome to my Soul Society. You're stuck in that chair. He's like, yeah, but everyone else is too dead to fight me on that claim.
Yeah, do you see Kira around anywhere? I don't think so.
So,
hard cut.
Just no warning whatsoever. Ishida run around. All of a sudden, an arrow lands next to him in the ground. And he hears someone shout, take it! He looks up. It's Ryuken and Ishin. Ryuken just shot an arrow next to him.
I fucking love this chapter.
And Ishin just goes, what are you doing here?
There's no time to explain. There was definitely going to be time, but there isn't now, so here, just take this remnants of your mom. Do it!
Ryuken says, I came to give you that arrowhead. Take it with you. And Ishin looks down, and the Quincy arrow disintegrates into just a silver arrowhead. And Ryuken says, all Quincy's subjected to Auswahlen develop a silver thrombus in the heart and die. The arrowhead is made from that silver. Flashback. Remember when Ryuken was working on his wife's, Ishida's mom's corpse? That was why he did it. In preparation for this day. Apparently. So Ryuken says, that arrowhead should be fired by you.
Hard cut!
First of all, Ishida has clearly demonstrated that he should not be the one entrusted with this arrowhead because he just got his ass kicked. And he's going to fight someone stronger than the guy who just kicked his ass? And then just, we've done our job, Ishin. Let's not help anymore.
Yeah, let's get going, Ishin. It's like, I was going to have a speech to Ichigo, but there's just no time anymore, so cool cameo, right, guys. Peace.
I know we're supposed to be super strong, who could have been helping in this battle from the get-go, but... Jeez.
I mean, did you see what Oscar knocked LeVar did? That dude was scurrying. I didn't want to get involved with that.
I don't want to fight a giant hand who grows into more giant hands.
Yeah, creepy. Hands freak me out. Aren't you a doctor? Yeah, a lot of things creep me out. I'm not a very good doctor.
That's why I surgically replaced my hands with medical tools!
Had those as spoons. Oh, this explains why surgery's so difficult.
Let me just cut into the heart before open heart surgery.
Time to make my incision. No! We lost another one. It seems like dropping the blood splattered remains into his daughter's hands. Clean that up for me, would you?
I'm gonna go eat cereal and yogurt at the same time with one hand. Ow, ow, ow. Okay, so
where were we?
I have no fucking clue.
Renji and Ichigo.
It's right, they're running along, I guess, the path between portals. Which is weird because I think that the portal that Yubak used is like the only portal in Bleach that doesn't have an explanation given. Because, like, the portal between the real world and Soul Society, that was explained. Portal with the... What was it? The ones that the Hollow summoned, that was explained. Mm. And the one that Yu-Gi-Oh! Uses, that's explained. This one is just something that Yubak just opened, and it's just like, bah! Apparently we can follow him, and we have to run down this path in the portal. This is surprisingly inefficient. Anyway... Ichigo collapses all of a sudden. And Renji hauls him up onto his shoulder and is like, let's go on, let's keep going. And Ichigo says, you're wounded. You could have stayed with Inoue, like Rukia did.
You should have stayed back with the women, you know, because you kind of blow and you're pretty bad, you know, so just stay back there with all the other useless dead weight. Like, hey, Chad will be there any minute. You'll be fine.
So Renji headbutts Ichigo and starts slapping him around, and he says, I'm saying this because you're the only one here for a long time. A real long time. A super, super, really ultra long time. Renji, really long time.
Renji's not good at talking. He's like, Renji, think hard. You strong man. Beep. Better headbutt!
that would be a pretty good speech, too, honestly.
Renji, do good. Good.
The Croods 2 featuring Amurai Renji. Renji says that he and Rukia, for a long time, had been drifting apart to the point where they weren't really even talking to each other. But it was you who closed that distance between us. That was why I decided if you couldn't push forward anymore, I'd keep you going, even if I had to carry you. So from now on, I'll never stop until the day you die. I like how he says that.
He's like, because, I mean, let's be real. You're going to die before I will.
I am basically immortal.
Yeah. It's like a fucking arrow just pierces them right through the face. They're going to see this coming.
I was one day away from retirement.
The most disposable member of Ichigo's five-man band. No!
Oh, God. So, Ichigo gets inspired, I guess? I mean, I like the sentiment that Renji has here, explaining why he has chosen to follow Ichigo, and it does provide a lot of context for why he would help out, you know, when Ichigo and company went into Waco Mundo, Ruki and Renji were the first two to go to help.
Yes.
And I've always just kind of assumed it was because Ichigo helped save Rukia, it was because they had grown a sense of respect for each other in their multiple fights. But this gives a really sympathetic side to things. You know, you did just save my friend, you helped us become friends again. And I'll never forget that, and so I owe you a debt, and so I'll help you from now on until you're dead. He's got, like, this whole wipe dead thing going on. And it makes me wish that we had gotten more of Renji in the series, because I don't want
to... It's kind of a hollow sentiment.
I don't want to launch into a really long tangent, which is our specialty, but I don't want to launch into a whole thing about how Bleach has no secondary character. Like, it's Ichigo the protagonist, and then who is the second most important character? Like, seriously. Can you nail that down? Because I can't. Who's the second most important character in Bleach? I have no clue. Because all these ones that are supposed to be part of... all these ones, these guys that are supposed to be, you know, part of Ichigo's core group have been neglected in rotating stretches of time. It seems like we've only had one character be important aside from Ichigo per arc, and even then, sometimes they really drop the ball on him. Like, Ched should have been the second most important character in the Fullbringer arc. He wasn't really. Ishida should have been the second most important character in this arc. He wasn't really. So, all these... I mean, I like this bit, but it really makes me think this could have... More moments like these, with more characters, could make Bleach such a better series than it is. And it makes me sad to think about that.
No, I completely agree. It's a nice scene, but it's a little bit marred by the fact that it feels like it's only there because this is something that Kubo kind of wanted to get done, and it's just taking place in a chapter where, like, seven other things have to happen.
Mm-hmm. So... we cut back to Yubak and Aizen. Aizen has been freed from his chair, and he...
For some reason.
Well, there was an attack of some sort that happened between them. Aizen specifically says, "Thank you for destroying that awful chair. Now I can stop you." And Yubak rightfully points out, "You want to fight me for the Soul Society? I don't see how that benefits you." And Aizen replies that it's not about whatever will actually benefit him or what will benefit Soul Society. It's just, I always crush those who try to control me.
I still just don't get why Yubak released him.
Yeah, he should just be like, "Well, good luck sitting there."
Yeah, he's like, in my unlimited futures, I am making one where that chair is the least comfortable. Boom, reality. It's like, you fuck!
Now it is a massage chair, but you are still lying back down. No!
It is a rocking chair, and it is always blowing wind. You're like, "Oh, god damn it! I'm gonna be so sick!"
Ichigo and Renji show up. They try to attack Yubak from behind. Something happens. I don't know what.
A little yin-yang symbol comes out of your box.
Well, yeah, like, eyes appear on his back, so you can tell that he sees it coming. We see Ichigo slash his sword, and then there's just sound effect, and suddenly Ichigo and Renji are skidding along the ground. What happened? I don't know. But Yubox says, "Ichigo, Renji, you two arrived rather quickly. I saw it! You two coming here! That's all back to how it was! And then it once again is broken. Bam!
Got you.
Oh, you thought that you had the trump card that defied me? No, I saw that coming too. Just got your hopes back up, bitches." But then he says something unusual, which is, "I thought I broke it clean. How damn fortunate, Ichigo." Like, wait, so he said it would be reformed. Wait, so is he confused because it's not completely shattered now? Oh, God. It's so difficult to tell what's going on now because of all of this reality-defying, countering each other crap that's going on. Ugh.
Yeah, well, we got the awesome reveal that Ichigo's sword is fixed for one chapter, apparently.
Now, and then suddenly it's cracked again. Yay!
Oh, please tell me that Koopa was like, shit, well, I introduced the Fullbringers, I have to have them come back, and their sole thing was to come back, fix Ichigo's sword, and then he's like, knowingly, while he's doing it, he's like, this is only going to be a one chapter fix, then it gets broken again because someone else has to come in to do the full fix or something like that. I would, I dream that's what happens, but,
Afro Shinigami is going to come in and be like, I can fix your sword!
Well, I have to imagine we might actually see what's-his-name show up again. The Zanbakuto Maker guy.
Right.
Because I feel like he was the only member of the Zero Division that didn't do anything in the actual fight against Yuubak. Like, I know he helped make Ichigo's swords, but there was that moment when
fought with him. He summoned he got his ass kicked. He got, headshotted, I think.
Huh. Maybe they'll have him come back. I feel like he didn't reveal anything, but I might just be forgetting. I mean, shocking, I can't remember every detail of the 3,000 different fucking side characters.
He introduced the one Zanpakuto that could not be, sheathed, so it was, encased in water.
Yeah.
And it was it's super dangerous, no one can possibly wield it, so I'm gonna use it anyway.
I would like this chapter a lot if it weren't for the fact... Here's what's good about this chapter. Because Kubo's getting canceled, he can't dick around with full-page spreads of nothing. This was far and away the most content we've seen in a chapter of Bleach since, probably since we've done Weekly Manga Recap. Because it's full of stuff. It's hard cut from this into another scene. Hard cut from this into another scene. Because we have to cover shit, goddammit. At every moment, Kubo's like... Oh, Ishin shooting that bow should have been a two-page spread! But almost every individual piece of it was kind of cool. It's stupid because it's just introduced, but I do like the sentiment of, Uryu's father passing him down a weapon, saying, hey, Uryu, you are going to be important in this final battle. Here's this memento.
For real this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, here's this memento of your mother to show you, one... I haven't forgotten about her. And two, she can be your literal weapon against these people. That's a hugely significant thing for him, because that's, the sort of the biggest crux of a lot of his anger towards the Soul Reapers and everything like that. And he may use that weapon to, in fact, save the whole Soul Society. So, I think that's cool. It comes out of nowhere, just like, oh hey, sometimes when Quincy dies, they become arrowheads, and it's really strong or something. So that's a bit odd. But, I like that, Renji's speech, I kind of like... Aizen versus Yuubak, of course, we kind of have to get to that. I thought it'd be kind of funny if Aizen just showed up and sat in a chair for the rest of the series and that was it, but, makes sense, we'll get into that. And it's just, the end is what's really weird. Boom, Ichigo's sword's broken again. It's why? I mean, it could go one of two ways. Some new way will come up to fix it, or it being broken was all part of the plan, and... When were you under the impression my sword was broken again? They turn it back on him, so... Okay. I don't know, but either... I feel like there's no real way for me to be satisfied
with this.
That's
a good point. Now that Aizen is there, how is this going to affect everything that happens?
It's
going to
be horseshit. It's like if you took the unstoppable force and the immovable object, but it's like the unrelenting horseshit... and the infuriating bullshit. Which one's gonna have to break first? It's not a bad chapter, though. It just, it's just suffering, unfortunately, for being cancelled. Although, I still have no idea when the series itself is supposed to end.
The only time frame we've gotten is within 10 weeks.
Yeah.
So, that could be a while. We thought it was going to be definitely August, but who knows at this point.
We may not be able to do Blogist, but we could still do Blatember.
September Bleach.
I was hoping to put Blatember. I just want Blah. 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 I don't know. Anyway.
Blah.
Let's move on to Fairy Tale. Fairy Tale, chapter 494, The Hill That Leads to Tomorrow, that has a cover page with a weird... almost upstart view of Mavis. Whatever. So
still waiting on that tomboy fetish, Kubo.
Yeah. He's like, ew, who wants that? Anyway, I've got my fucking submissive fetish to get across to you this week, so deal with that first. So, essentially, this is Xerif and Mavis having their confrontation within Fairy Tail. In case you forgot, Xerif has been teleported basically right inside Fairy Tail up to Mavis, so end game complete for the members of the Spriggan 12. And they're essentially just going back and forth of like, oh, you know, it's been 95 years, it's been like 100 years this way, like 95 to be exact. And he's like, oh, well, it's nice to see that you're still around. And she's starting to, like, think to herself.
I was kind of hoping that he would, like, hit on her.
She's like, still looking good.
Still walking around barefoot. I see.
You know what I like? I know you do that for me. You did it for me the first time. You still do it thinking about me, don't you? Like, oh, this is weird.
Hey, you like, how you like my sweet cape? I'm an emperor now.
Yeah, he's like, I got this cape for you. Why? Because capes are cool, and you like things that are cool. Capes aren't cool. What cape? Is he just rips it off, burns it. Burn all the capes in the kingdom! So, where were we? Something about you giving me a foot job?
Desperate to impress Mavis, Xerif is the new canon.
So she's thinking to herself when all of a sudden, like, some wind blows over and she turns to Crystalla again. I thought this was hilariously going to be like, because she's having a thought of, like, I finally returned to my original body, and, like, Xerif would just be like, back to the crystal. I thought that'd be great. But apparently,
make me a sandwich while you're in there.
Yeah. Massage those douchebags. Hey, why don't you put on something hot while you're frozen up like that? Hey, maybe she'll be quicker getting out of the shower this way, you know what I'm saying?
one of these days, Mavis, bang, pow, to the crystal.
So, Invol actually was the one who did it, and Xerif actually doesn't like that, because he doesn't like seeing her in crystal again, in any way, shape, or form. He doesn't like seeing her movement taken away, so even though Invol's like, I understand you have a relationship with this woman, she is dangerous. She is single-handedly the most dangerous person to you right now. I cannot let her risk attacking you with Fairy Heart. Apparently, that's I forget if we've actually been told what Fairy Heart exactly does, but apparently Xerif is so confident she won't use it because of the consequences therefore, so who knows. They unfreeze Mavis and instead put a fetishy collar on her that's like, I don't know, it's weird. Essentially, it's like that, like, and like X-Men mutant dampening collar they put on them in the comics a couple times or this TV show. And I get that, like, the aspect of, like, a collar that restricts, you know, magical superhuman abilities. But I don't know why it has the chain on it when the chain doesn't go anywhere. It's really, really just for, like, kinky look, I guess. But apparently it completely seals off her abilities, and in addition to that is kind of, like, mind-controlling her within her own body. Like, I guess she can still think, but she can't control her actions. So Xerif takes her out on a tour, shows her what's outside of Fairy Tail, and it's this massive 2-page spread essentially showing all of the entire continent's army just positioned in one location. It is the biggest force you could kind of comprehend from this. We had been told before their army was huge. This is the first time, I guess, you're really getting a good scope of that, because you just see dots of people across this huge 2-page spread. Then we go a little bit forward, and it turns out...
I fucking hate this chapter.
And turns out Ajeel and Jacob are back. They're like, yes, your guildmates are coming here to reclaim you and take back the guild hall. But the question is, will they even make it to this doors? Desert! Desert, 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 desert!
I am the assassin who has the most un-assassiny powers there are.
Desert, 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 desert!
Agreed.
Chris, I'm gonna start a ground-themed gym in Pokemon Go with Ajeel.
You just name your character Ajeel. You have nothing but desert-themed characters.
Desert! Desert, desert, desert!
Oh,
desert.
And that's the nickname of all your characters, just desert, desert in all caps, desert, 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 desert.
Also, apparently DeMaria and Brandish are super best friends now.
Well, they had their attitude, and it is, like, I guess her thought of, like, oh, they captured Brandis, she's not as strong as I am, I hope they didn't do anything bad, but, yeah, they brought Dee Maria back, and
she's... I hope they didn't make her wear more clothes than usual.
Yeah, she's shocking me, she's fully dressed again, and we see the Dragno there, Licarde. August kind of gives him a glare, like, he doesn't like him, but Mavis is like, oh, that's August, he's the strongest, but this guy, I've never felt magic like his before. And Xerath says, Licard is my secret weapon. He may even be able to defeat Akbalagia. Then we go over to Nineheart, the guy who brought memories back to people. And guess who he brought back, Nick? Wall! And Bradman! And Og and Godserida!
Hang on. Start that over and go a little slower between them.
Okay. He brought back Wall!
Yay!
He brought back Bradman!
Yay!
He brought back God Serena!
Who gives a shit? because Wall and Bradman show back up, and Bradman's like, I have returned from the I have returned from hell! And Wall is like, ah, all the 12 are here! And then God Serena is like, I totally didn't get schooled and killed in one shot!
He's fucking Ginyu Force! He's like, ooh! yeah. So all the way back, I do love at least though Nineheart being like, "No, all three of you are dead. So you have to protect me, or you all just disappear, stupids." I did kind of like that, but that's the stakes that are in right now. All of the members of the Spriggan 12 are back, Nick. All of them are here. This entire army is here. Licarde's here. Invol's here. Everyone is here! Can Fairy Tail possibly challenge these odds? You see a big two-page spread of all the members of Xerath's army, the important ones, standing together in their badass villain pose.
And it's wouldn't this have been so much more impressive if two-thirds of them hadn't already lost?
Yeah, I was about to be like, you already got beat, you got beat a really long time ago. You were beat because you gave up, you got fucking clowned. You're dead. You always sucked. You're Urza's mom, but I don't care. It's just like, yeah, this is... It's not as exciting as you'd want it to be, especially since most of those villains weren't even all that, like, impressive or memorable. Like, bringing Wallback's kind of scary, because he at least, like, had a moment where you're like, oh, this dude's actually pretty tough, and, like, had a really tough fight with Laxus. Mm-hmm. But, like, bringing back a Geel, it's like,
He got killed... He got killed by Sniper Girl. Like, yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. Nineheart, it was just like, once they figured out friendship, I'm pretty sure they beat him. Eh? Like, it's just like, it's not that interesting to...
God, Serena, the guy who acknowledged you just walked over.
I guess the only thing that may be interesting is that some of these people kind of were beaten by very specific counters that couldn't come up again. And maybe there's some interesting storytelling you could tell, like, say, Bradman runs into Gajeel and Levy again, and this time it's Levy who maybe puts herself on the line, saying, like, I got you back once, I'm not losing you again, kind of thing. I feel like that's not going to happen. I feel like 9/10 of this group is going to get clowned again at some point, because now they're...
The fucking
perfume guy will fly in from the side, like, perfume dropkick! And fucking this entire back row of characters will just get knocked out in one shot.
Agnologia just kind of... Like, the next page after the two-page spread is Akinologia in dragon form rearing about the ground and just eats half of them whole.
Oh my god!
It's the next two pages! And hold hands, and they're like, we are Spriggan 12!
If it's this two-page spread, the next page is the exact same two-page spread, except everyone essentially beyond Licard, you just see is getting scooped up into Akbalagia's mouth, and then the next page is the same shot, but it's Xerath, like, turning slightly behind himself, like, what was that?
Oh, well, no.
It's just empty.
There's oh, Akbalagia just did a flyby. Did anyone important get eaten? No, we're good.
I guess we lost Invol, but who cares?
You hear from inside Akinologia's stomach, Desert!
This is a desert?
Oh, thank you for that one.
So we cut away to Urza, who's doing, like, the morning or the evening before thought, like, war never changes. This is the most hopeless situation we've ever been in. Which is actually somewhat weird to me, because I read Ravemaster, which is Hero's big series before this, and that actually had a very significant chapter of this nature. Because they did have, like, the day before the big battle chapter, and that was essentially where the main romance of the series happened, like, finally came together. Like, they actually became a couple in that moment. So that's kind of, like, a cool, significant moment. Here, it's not nearly as memorable, because it's Urza.
They really just say, like, we'll win.
Yeah, Urza's just like, this is going to be tough, and who knows if we'll all make it back. Enjoy your slumber, my friends. This may be our final...
I'm wiped out!
Yeah, everyone wakes up and they're like, no, we're awesome! Credits. The fuck was the point of this? Why were they asleep if they were all just gonna, like, fucking Undertaker up and be like, I agree, we rock! I'm putting on my hat now!
It would have been a much better moment if they just ended on that moment for Mirza where she just, like, you know, enjoy your rest because this might be the last dawn we all share together. And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so Nazi's just like, we'll pull together and we'll win this fight. Oh, God. It's literally the most generic we will win shonen moments. And Fairy Tail's great, though. Just like, well, that's a shonen moment. Yep.
It's just,
got that one mass produced at the factory.
It's just so weird that it's a like, she's talking while they're sleeping to them, but not obviously expecting them to be listening. If they're all sleeping, what was the point of having them immediately wake up and respond to it in, like, the, like, action, like, putting on my hat, getting ready pose? Like, why not just have them awake and just say this, and they're just like, no, let's do this. Why just, it seems so weird. Oh, this was a really not good chapter of Fairy Tail. If only just because it's tough to care about the Spriggan 12 being back together again when, like, only four of the members were even interesting to begin with. So,
well, not only, yeah, and because, like, only three of them have not been, you know, defeated in some way, shape, or form. August is a little bit of an asterisk to that because he did get ganked and almost defeated by fucking Mest of all people. Like, if Brandish hadn't saved his life, he would have eventually bled out and died. So, really, the only ones is like, okay, you've got Irene, who has been super impressive, rearranged the continent, basically defeated Acnologia, which is pretty crazy, by, you know, sending him far away, but still, she momentarily defeated him, and then Dragneel, because he's only just been introduced.
Yeah.
All the others have gotten schooled in one way, shape, or form.
I mean, we still haven't gotten to see what August can do, and since he's been built up as the strongest, it's kind of, you know, waiting to see that happen. But yeah, everyone else, we've seen what they've done, and most of them aren't impressive. So, yeah.
If you want to have Brandish in August, and Irene, and all brought together, that's significant enough, I think, without fucking the girl who cuts women's clothes off while she froze time. Like,
or the dude who just had sand powers.
Or the guy who thought that he could defeat someone by embarrassing them by getting them naked, but got more embarrassed than they were.
I forgot how stupid that logic was.
Like, these were characters that did not need to be brought back. Just have Nineheart bring back the dead ones, and that's it. Leave Ajeel gone, leave Jacob gone, leave DeMaria gone. Bring back, have that be it. You know, Wall and Bradman and fucking God Serena, because you didn't get to see him really do anything. Nineheart, Brandish, August, Irene. What's the ninth one that I'm forgetting? Because I always said get rid of Jacob and Ajeel. Whatever. I'm not going to keep track of all this. Yeah, so this was a really big... I think this was my least favorite chapter of the week, honestly, because it's just like, the Spriggan 12 are back, and me being incredibly unimpressed by it.
It's slightly it's like slightly worse than even if he had been like, let me introduce you to the real Spriggan 12. At least it would have been like, alright, well, these could be new people who aren't poop, who aren't just desert, 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 desert.
Alright.
Let's move on.
Yes. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 175, The Totsuki Train Departs. Yeah.
Like the cover page.
We get, yeah, it looks like it's part of a two-page spread, because you can see, like, Soma's, like, arm reaching in, and his headband, like, where's the rest of him?
He's like, no, I'm just trying to cut off that fucking one chick's face, like, oh, yeah, this is dark.
I'm gonna get you,
I'm not comfortable with this.
We cut around to various places as people are advancing through the exams. That one creepy girl we get mention of passing, I guess. The professor who is trying to sabotage Soma's group is kind of upset about it, and she also is told that all the resistance groups managed to pass. Yukino is like, Erinichi, we passed! And Erinichi's just like, why are you smiling? Like the most angry speech bubble I've ever seen in this series.
I have to imagine she's far angrier that the kid fucking hugged her. Like, I would be the one I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Do I look like I'm a person you fucking hug when things have gone okay?
But she's, you know, scolding like, you know, this is only the first of many stages. It's not the time to be celebrating yet. And someone's like, hey, Nikiri, you want a bite of the salmon we made? You be quiet! But we get a bit of a time skip as everyone reminds the audience of the context. You know, we've got to all travel across Hokkaido. There are many different exams we've got to pass. They say, yeah, we're actually going to be taking a train in order to get to the next leg of our journey. And someone's like, God, our school is rich. Let's have our own private train. Why not?
The guy in the accounting department's like, it's so much more economical if everyone just stays in coach. No, why everyone needed cabins?
Actually, I should clarify that. They don't have their own train. They have their own rail line that runs through the entire region. That's so much money. It's not going to be generating any goddamn income whatsoever.
Yeah, that dude's like, do you know how much upkeep there is for this train that literally is only run for this fucking event, but needs upkeep and maintenance all year round? No, you don't care, because it's theatrical and wacky. I have to budget this!
Like, there is no fucking... It's not generating any income, because no one's going to buy a ticket on the train.
Yeah.
So... Everyone is like, oh, this train is magnificent, and look at it, it's so luxury. It has nice chairs and tables, bedrooms, and so on. It's so wonderful. We're traveling first class. And Yukio's like, if it weren't for this advancement exam, this would be the best vacation ever. And she cries tears of blood.
Yeah, it's kind of dark.
It's really weird. Hisako drags some of the students off to force them to continue studying. Erina thinks to herself, you know, getting worried that she's got to keep everyone's prepared because they're all going to have to pass. Apparently, this super ultra-rich train still has a first-class cabin in it. Like, there's, like, first-class and first-ist class, I guess. She's approached by Aldini's young brother, and he just says, you want to take a break and, you know, come and enjoy the train with us? No, I've got to work. Okay, bye. Sakaki, the long-haired girl, shows up. You want to go enjoy the massage chairs and have the camera focus on our boobs being close together?
It is a weird panel where it just looks like their chests are talking to one another.
It really does.
Like, it's just like, hey there! Here we are! Do you want to go get a spa?
Hey, you want to go to a fan service scene, Erina?
She's like, just like, no, no, I've got things to do. I'll catch you later, now. Bye!
And Megumi shows up, and she's like, oh, you know, I brought you some tea so that you, you know, can relax. It's okay, Arata already poison tested it. I love that detail. It's like, well, Hisoka didn't drop dead, and she hasn't been written out of the series, so I guess she's fine.
Yeah.
And of course, eventually, Soma shows up. And he's like, I've got salmon skin, Chris, if you want something. The most fucking... I brought super salty, cheap-ass snack food if you want.
I've got garbage!
Hi, God Tongue, raised on the most incredibly refined of ingredients. You want my Cheetos? Look, that would be the way... Look, Soma, this would be the perfect way into my heart. But seriously, know your audience.
She's like, they got new ranch-flavored Cheetos. She's like, that sounds somehow more disgusting than regular Cheetos. That's even worse. His face is just covered in Cheeto dust. Like, what?
Yeah. Erina points out, you know, it's like, what is this? You know, everyone's coming to visit me and is trying to get me to visit them and relax and all of this. And so it says, yeah, I was talking about that with Tadakura earlier. She was worried that, you know, you've been helping us study all week. Even during the test day, you were glancing towards us, trying, you know, making sure to check on us. You're putting in probably more effort into this than any of us are. And so Tadakura was feeling guilty about that. And so somebody just passes that on and says, you know, everyone just wants to thank you for all the hard work that you're putting in. And Erina cinderates it. You know, I'm just doing what I chose to do. But she also starts to drink the tea, and she, before she starts to drink it, she goes, it's warm.
She's like, this tastes like whiskey. He's like, oh, oops.
It's not poisonous. Go to the room where Hisako is still teaching her. You son of a...
It's just her like, Megumi, why? She's like, I'm secretly a mush in my spare time. I love gushing other people tumble.
And two bro students are like, dude, Hisako, let's go pick up chicks, yo. You bet, yo, we're gonna pick up all the bitches. Oh, God. Then they pass the tree line outside, and so Erina and Hisako, and not Erina and Hisako, Erina and Soma look outside at this super pretty starry sky. And they're like, oh.
And so it's like,
yeah. And then someone goes, I want some salmon!
he's got such a guy mindset. He's just like, so oh man, that does kind of look like food. I wonder if a bear attacked our car right now. Could I fight it off? I don't know if bear would taste good with salmon. It must, they eat salmon, right?
In my opinion, you don't use something in the ring if it wouldn't work on a bear. Anyway, Erina... says, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, well, you know, the stars in the sky sparkle like gems. Salmon Rose sparkles like gems. Aren't they similar? And he's like, no! I really like the contrast that they specifically draw between them, because Erina's like, come on, you know, if this is like pearls before swine right now, geez, you can't even appreciate the beauty of the scenery around us, and you're just so focused on food. So it's like, yep, munchy salmon, Chris.
I love salmon.
But Erin has a moment of reflection where she's thinking to herself, you know, this is, I guess, you know, the relation between myself and Yukihira has really changed. I, you know, couldn't believe that he was Saiba's son, but you know, now here we are, we're sitting together and we're chatting, and it's okay, I guess. You know. Oh, you're so... Yuso Sunsun.
It's a lot more working than we've seen before, because she's actively even like giggling with him, which is a side of Erina you don't normally see.
But I mean, the main thing that I take away from this is because they drive home the fact that the whole of Polaris has really bonded with her, and she's really worried about them. You know, she may not act overtly friendly with all of them whenever they're around her. She might act annoying and stuff, but clearly her actions have demonstrated that she really does care about them. And I like the way that even she doesn't really understand that herself, because she doesn't get it. She doesn't have friends, you know. We cut back to that one professor whose name I still haven't bothered to memorize. But she's like, oh, we haven't been able to fail any of them. Well, I must make certain one of them fails stage 2. And then she hears something on the news, and she has, like, "That's it! Just you wait, you stubborn resistance fools! I'll get rid of every one of you if it's the last thing I do!"
That'd be great if it was like an epic. "We now interrupt this news report to show you an old episode of Pokemon." And she's like, "That's it! I'll build a giant hole!" And then they fall down it!
To protect Totsuki from resistant students!
It's like she stops and like puts on a different wig and then shuffles to the other side. I forgot the line! Did it not see evil's the truth in those? Just listen to fuck and starts doing the T-Rock.
Meowth, that's right! Now give me a Pikachu, you Karasoma!
Wait, stop! And then she pops up at me. Wow, no, I'm a... I almost missed the best bomb.
Going for Johto Journey's version of Team Rocket. Wobbuffet made an invaluable addition to that team, I gotta say.
Yeah.
You thought the Team Rocket's motto couldn't get any better, but then Wobbuffet came along and proved you all wrong.
Didn't eventually like five other Pokemon started adding on to it?
It's like, okay, one was good enough. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, now you're milking it. You've lost the heart of this.
I like this chapter as a quiet moment of reflection, but I am looking forward more into when this is going to get intense and see what they actually have to go through.
It's perfectly fine. I'm excited to see where this kind of goes. Mm-hmm. It's nice seeing that ship move a little bit forward, though.
Let's move on to My Hero Academia, chapter 99, Goodbye 2-Digit Chapters, Hello 3-Digits.
Wait, did he actually call it that? Wow, he did! That's fucking awesome!
That's amazing. Horikoshi, you're the best. Last time... Everyone moved into the dorms at UA, and Class A decided to have a King of the Rooms competition to decide who was the best interior decorator. This is the best series. It's getting really intense. We get a moment of insight into Mineta's thoughts, because remember, he was the one who said, "Hey, why aren't the girls showing us their rooms?" He's thinking to himself, "I knew if I was the only one calling for this, everyone would shut me down like usual. But now... there. Sorry, hang on a second."
It's like, "I need some water if I have to do this."
"Every pride's on the line, now I'm cashing in. You can't oppose the will of people, and I get to hitch a free ride. Now it'll totally happen naturally. I get to feast my eyes on the girls' rooms. Oh, hell yeah."
He's just like stunned Shoji on the way out. So I'm like, why?
Stone Cold's gotta get himself some Nuki. They blocked all the porn sites in our dorms.
I don't follow wrestling enough anymore, but I heard something that made me laugh so hard. Apparently, they just recently had a draft because they're doing the brand split again. And I heard, like, I was asked to tell him, I was like, "I can't believe they're doing this schedule." They're like, "Yeah, no, it's going to be great. They're going to have separate shows and like, separate pay-per-views for each show." I was like, God, they're doing this again?
No, you don't want the separate pay-per-views, guys. Trust me. Then that's how you end up with Bobby Lashley winning in the main event.
Oh, God. I laughed so hard when I heard they were doing that.
Oh, I like a lot of it. I'm not going to watch the whole thing. I will say, though, probably my favorite part of it was they said that they were going to have, like, what was it, like 70 picks or whatever? 60 picks, 50 picks, that was it. You know, basically divide up the whole roster except for the ones who are injured and not coming back anytime soon. But then they stopped at 49 instead of going through the whole 50 and just left Heath Slater in the draft room while they turned the lights off. They literally did that.
They basically did it like it's an actual draft, though. Like, they had coverage. Like, yeah. I didn't watch it, but I assume, like, the first pick happened and it was just, like, fucking Mel Kiper and Don McShay. Like, well, here's the interesting thing about John Cena. 16-time world champion. He's got everything. This kid's got a future. I wanted to see what they did when Kane showed up. This old motherfucker can still go. He is fucking ancient. Ask your parents who Kane is. They thought he was old when they were kids.
And Kalisto cut literally the worst promo ever. Poor Kalisto. He's so awesome, but don't let him talk.
People are just like, I thought you were talking about my hero. I'm like, we were, until the topic of wrestling came up.
Big E sent out the most hilarious tweet of the night, which was, hey, don't be hating on Kalisto's promo. English is his second language and... Wait, what? He's from Chicago? Oh. Oh, he's so fucking funny. Anyway, we're going to door competition time. Before we get to that, the title page features Uraraka. I think, yeah, she's dressed as, oh god, what was her name? From Barrage.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about the female character from that, right?
Yeah, although she's got an extra fucking skull on her head. Uraraka's like, I killed the creature that this skull belonged to.
I like that image, though. It's just kind of nice to be like, oh wow, like, a series in Jump that is a female character undercover that isn't used in a cheesecake way. It's just like, hey, look at this cool costume sort of thing.
I don't know, Chris. I can see her knees.
That whore.
Oh, good. So we get some more showing off the norms. Kirishima's... Fuck. He's like, you girls probably won't understand it. This manliness! He's got a fucking punching bag. There's, like, what is it says? There's a poster that says burning up with manliness on the wall.
If you didn't play the most recent generation of Pokemon games, you may not have seen it, but essentially there was, like, the super training for Pokemon, and in it, when you, like, tap on the punchy bag, like, you'd get, like, random messages, and they were the most awesome masculine shit ever. It'd be like, punch harder with the muscles of your friendship! I was like, I fucking love this. That's what my move would be if I could.
Kirishima is basically like, welcome to Shonen, the bedroom.
Yeah. Which isn't nearly as dirty and suggestive as you think it is.
It's got, like, he's got what is seemingly Bruce Lee on his wall. It says, burning up dragon. And they go over to Shoji's room, and he says, there's nothing interesting. And then Shoji was like, what do you mean nothing interesting? There's literally nothing in this
room.
Holy
shit, what do you do?
There is a bed, which is like a mattress. Then there is a low-end table with a mat in front of it for him to kneel at. But there's nothing on the table. What's he got there? He doesn't even have school supplies.
It's so weird, because there was like a dude last week who they were like, oh wow, your room's just kind of boring. And I was like, okay. This dude, it's like, holy shit, are you dying and you've sold everything off before you die? Or what is this?
He's like, I've learned sign language so that I can speak with the girl that I wronged as a kid.
I'm like, oh. It's going to be one of those series, isn't it?
I like how Minaya then goes, guys like you always turn out to be the biggest perverts. You're one to fucking talk. Then they go over to Sarah's room. It's... I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, he's got too much money and has been to designer places too much. He's got his whole feng shui thing going on. Everything's got a design on it.
I thought it was kind of like, oh, like, maybe he's a much more cultural person than we realized, because it definitely has, like, I want to say it's an African aesthetic, but I'm probably, like... I'm trying not to be, like, racist and wrong at the same time. Right. But it definitely, I mean, they say it's, like, a foreign exotic thing, so I thought maybe it's meant to apply, like, maybe he's a little bit worldly, but I don't know.
Yeah. They go to Todoroki's room, and he's just like, let's just fucking get this over with. I like how the girls are acting, because Yairo's like, it's our class's most capable student, and Ashi was like, and our class's best-looking guy. What could the always cool Todoroki's room be like? He opens the door and is like, it's a Japanese-style room! And it's even built differently than ours! The frickin' flooring is different, he's got a different door, and he says, no, my home is traditionally Japanese, so I don't like modern flooring. They're like, we don't care why! How did you do this in one day? And he's just like, hard work. What?
I do like the. I like that it's like hard work, but it's so like restrained too. It's just like I work hard.
Then they go to Sato, Sugar Rush guy, and it's a pretty normal looking room. But they observe he's got like a freaking easy bake oven in there. He's like, "Oh, I almost forgot! I was baking a cake in here, and I wanted to share it with everyone. You guys want some? I didn't put frosting on." They're like, "Oh yes, share it with us!" And all the girls just fucking freak out over how wonderful it is, and they're like, "This is bullshit! This is fucking bribery!"
He's like, "In my defense, no one told me we were doing this."
No, he was doing it ahead of time. He was just doing it as a host. I really like Sato now, honestly. He seems like a really nice guy. He's just like, "I just made us a housewarming cake and I wanted to share it with
everybody." Yeah, I'm friendly to everybody. I'm like, "Oh, you're the greatest. What are your superpowers?" He's like, "Eat sugar and get strong." I'm like, "That's right. Now I remember why I forget you."
Yeah. I like the explanation he gives. You know, it's like, you know, this is for helping me try my quirk, so I'm experimenting with a lot of sweets and stuff. I know how to cook.
I do like how slowly over time we're starting to get more and more of these characters fleshed out.
Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of these ones were characters like we already knew a lot about, so it was good for a quick gag. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, okay, Todoroki's got a Japanese-style room. How wacky. Ida's got a bunch of pairs of glasses. Deku has posters of All Might everywhere. But then it's like, Tokoyami with his suit. That is a hilarious joke.
It's never going to stop now. Like, now it's like, I see this character in a whole new light.
Exactly. And then now we've got, you know, stuff from Sato and, you know, some more stuff with Shoji. He's just got nothing in his room. Like I said in last week's discussion, you know, insight into the characters. So
I heard this, I think, on the Jump podcast. How much do you think Bakugo's room just looks exactly like Deku's room? His is also just an All Might fanboy room.
That is a good point.
I thought that'd be awesome.
Then it's time for the girls, so we do Jiro first. She's got a bunch of musical instruments in her room. And they're like, "Oh wow, this is even more interesting than we thought." And Uraraka says, "You're one rocking girl, Jiro."
I just like how awkwardly nervous she is about all this. Like, it's not a lame room. It's a room full of, like, music and stuff, but she's still, like, turning her face to the wall.
Parts of it are lame. I mean, musical score bedsheets.
I mean, the fucking candy guy has bedsheets just to say sugar over it.
That's a good point. I really like the way that she fiddles with her earplugs nervously. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like she's fiddling with her air, but they're her, you know, quirk. And the T.O. Rock's like, "Can you actually play all these?" "Well, yeah, kind of, yeah." I also like how Aoyama and Kirishu and Kaminari say, "There's nothing girly about this room at all." So she fucking stabs them with her earplugs as she's walking to the next room.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Hagakure, her room is very girly and normal because she's not trying to draw attention to herself because she's the spy. they're like,
"Oh, underneath that teddy bear is just a mine."
Mineta tries to fucking sneak into her. Like, the second girl's room he goes into, "I must try and steal her goddamn panties," or whatever the fuck he's doing.
Well, I think he did. It's just her clothes are invisible or something.
No, I don't think that's it. I think that he's...
Well, he's sniffing something, and looks like his hand's cupping something. I'd assume her, like, actual underwear would be visible, though, because it's only her costume that's usually visible, right? Or invisible.
I don't know.
I'm like, "Dear Horikoshi, I found a massive plot hole in your series, and you should probably just stop writing it, because you fucked up big time."
Yeah. Ashido has lava lamps and hearts on a bunch of stuff. Uraraka's room is very normal. Like, I don't think that I have a single thing. There's really nothing noteworthy about it, I think, at all, honestly.
Uraraka's. Yeah, it's kind of just a simple room. It looks like she might have, like, a globe, like a scientific poster on her wall. It's kind of interesting, but yeah.
Yeah. Then they go, they're like, "Oh, it's Suyu's room next." But Uraraka says, "Well, she wasn't really feeling well, so let's not bother her." Oh, but it's just like a fucking tank of water in there. Then they go to Yayorozu's room, and it's a bookshelf, a mirror, and a fucking four-poster king-size bed. And they're like, what happened? Yeah, you're, well, I mean, it's the same stuff I have back home. I didn't realize the rooms would be so small. I was like, God, she's rich.
Fucking spoiled bitch.
And that's everyone. So yep. They go back to the common room, and they say, okay, well, Bakugo and Suyu aren't here, so it's just the other 18 of us. And they say, okay, well, winning with 6 votes, it's Rikido Sato! Yes, all the girls voted for you, because of the cake! And they're like, wait a minute, this was the size of the best interior decorator! This is bullshit!
This is fucking horseshit! God damn it!
And Tokiyami's like, Todoroki says, can I go back to bed now?
Yeah, I was like, he's like the most beleaguered everyone here. It's just him like, how am I the one fucking asshole who got dragged on this entire fucking excursion?
And Ida says, you mustn't forget to brush your teeth because we all ate cake.
That's
wet noodle Ida.
He just want to stand there and just be like, God, I fucking hate you, Ida. It's just him being like, oh, almost 10 o'clock. Everyone should make sure they're back into their rooms before a curfew strikes, or I'll have to tell the teacher. You're not the RN, the RM. Yeah, but I'm just going to do it anyway.
Oh, God. I heard some of you say some dirty words, so make sure to wash your mouths out with soap before you go to bed.
Like, it'd be great, like, they're having a house party. He's like, sorry, guys, I have to cut us up at 10 p.m. The drinks might get spiked. He's like, no one spiked the drinks. He's like, yes, but statistically, parties are more likely to have their punches spiked after 10 p.m. So playing by the logistics and the statistics of this, I'm going to end it now before any naughtiness happens.
He's like the worst version of Captain America.
It's just...
Oh, God. Before everyone can head off to bed, the Uraraka grabs Todoroki and Deku and Ida and Kirishima and Yairozu, basically everyone who went to save Bakugo. You know, hauls them all outside, because Suyu has something to say to them all. And Suyu says, this is kind of awkward because I usually don't hold back whatever I want to say, but I really didn't know what to say in this case. And everyone remembers that she was the one who scolded them all and pointed out, hey, you guys shouldn't be breaking the law. That makes us no better than the villains. And, but Suyu says, you know, the way I worded that, I think it was pretty harsh. And then you guys went anyway, and I was really shocked. I mean, I had tried to stop you. I felt really bad about it, and all these nasty feelings welled up in me. And I didn't know what I could say to you after that point. Like I couldn't just go back to the way things were before, just chatting normally, and it broke my heart. And she starts to cry. And one of the things I really like about this is they play up on her frog-like nature. Because she doesn't have eyelids. So she's just got tears awkwardly welling up in her eyes until she eventually wipes them away. And she says, you know, she wants to be friends with everyone, and she's really upset and stuff, and everyone feels super awkward around her, but Uraraka eventually says, you know, we all felt uneasy about this. We all want to, you know, start over and be friends again. And that's why we did the whole King of the Rooms thing, because we wanted to get things back to normal and just smile together again. And everyone closes in around Suyu, and Kirishima apologizes and comforts her. And it's really sweet. I really like this moment, and it was a surprising conclusion to the chapter, honestly. She then closed her eyes, proving my observation about her not having eyelids to be wrong. She's just weird like that, I guess, keeping her eyes open almost all the time.
It's still possible she may not be able to use it like we use our eyelids.
I don't know. So Deku, you know, thinks about this for a bit. You know, we are all uneasy. We all want to start over again. Everyone worked hard to get things back to how they were before, and now we're aiming to be heroes, pushing each other to succeed. And then we cut to the next day. Everyone's in class. And Aizawa says, okay, we are going to get you guys your provisional licenses. And so the test for it is going to be really, really difficult. This having a hero's license means, you know, you're responsible for saving people's lives. It's a heavy responsibility, so it's going to be really difficult for you guys. And on average, there's only 50% success rate, even for provisional licenses. So time for some hellish training again. Each of you, starting today, is going to have to come up with 2 ultimate moves. Everyone's like, yes!
I mean, that would be like my favorite fucking day in class if they're just like, alright, come up with your special signature ultra moves. Like, this is the greatest day. They're like, Alright, well, it's going to be hard for you when your power is, like, the ability to, like, turn off electricity in a room you're in. Like, aww.
I can throw small objects to me.
I'm like that loser kid from X-Men 2 who could change a channel by blinking. They're like, yeah. Come up with some ultra moves.
Yes, but you would. I'm sure you would rather be that kid instead of that version of Colossus. Now, if you were Deadpool Colossus, if you were Deadpool Colossus, that would be different.
Or he could be Colossus from Days of Future Past, who just dies 7 times.
I'm pretty sure that was the same actor as in X-Men 1.
It is, but it's almost 2 different roles. One, it's like, I don't do anything. The other, it's like, I die a lot.
I die twice in one movie.
I die so the audience has some idea who this group of characters who keeps dying is. Because you don't know who the fuck, like, Longshot and Heatstroke is. Whatever our stupid names are, Warpath.
Look, Iceman died again. Remember when he had that weird love triangle with Rogue and Shadowcat? Well, he's not important anymore.
Despite Anna Paquin having, like, 6th billing on this movie ahead of, like, Ian McKellen. Fucking.
How does she pull that off? All she does is hold her head above Hugh Jackman's head. Oh, God. I guess we'll talk a little bit about Nisekoi.
Chitakoi, true girl.
Yep. Onodera, after confessing to Raku last week, Raku says, I have also loved you this whole time. I've loved you for a long time. But Onodera actually understands it. I understand it already. Your feelings have changed, and there's someone else in your heart now. And she gives him the key to the locket, the one that will actually open it. You know, and she says, I remember, you know, who your promise girl was, but I shouldn't have this anymore. I don't remember what's inside the locket, so it's up to you what to do now, Ichijo. You know, go to her, she's waiting for you. And Raku heads off after thanking her. Ruri and Shu show up. And there's a little moment where Onodera says, you know, I thought that I would be a lot sadder after this happened. You know, I thought that I would cry. And I'm kind of confused, so I don't really know what I'm feeling right now. And she actually asked Ruri, you know, what am I feeling? Look at my face and tell me what it looks like. And Ruri gives her a big hug and says, you look terrible. You look like you're really sad. And she does.
Feels kind of fat. She's like, I feel like right now is a good time. I can't make it feel worse.
If you had stuck to that workout plan that I planned for you, you would have landed that guy a long time ago.
She's like, if someone would lay out the cheesecake, chunky chunk, chunk, chunk. She's like, why? You're like, I figured you couldn't really be lower than you are now, so I wanted to get that out in the open.
I mean, I'm never going to be...
Also, I killed your cat.
And then Raku goes off on his own. He opens the locket up and sees that he, in fact, did make the promise with Onodera, because he sees their names written together on a piece of paper.
So I will admit, they did not go with the nobody is the true one ending. They did actually make a conclusive. Onodera was the one who made the promise with them, but Chitake is the one he has feelings for. So I applaud Komi-sensei for not going with, like, a everybody's a winner ending.
Mm-hmm. I do like the way that this played out, mm-hmm. that... You know, Raku's choice today is different from the choice he made as a kid, because yeah. That makes sense. You know, the person that you like when you were a kid is going to change from, you know, the way that you are when you're a teenager, or maybe even when you're an adult. You know, people's feelings for each other change, and people's preferences for a romantic partner also change.
And I also like that he commits to this, too. It's not like, yeah. Oh, you had feelings for me? Well, I've always kind of had them for you, but maybe in my life. He just firmly says, like, I'm sorry, but I have feelings for someone else.
Yeah, and he stays, you know, he has a moment where he feels really bad. He's, you know, clutching the letter to his chest. But the first thought that actually goes through his head is no regrets. You know, mm-hmm. I already decided who I had set my heart on, and to go back on that just because I found out about this, that would be dishonest. It wouldn't be fair to me or to her. You know, I realized that I had feelings for Chitake, and I realized that she's the one that I want to be with. And I like that he also has a moment of humorous realism where he goes, you know, if she rejects me after this, that's gonna suck.
Yeah, I do like that, where he's just like, oh, this could go real bad.
But I'm gonna go do this. And that's where the chapter ends. He catches up with Shudigay, and presumably the next chapter is going to be them having a big discussion.
Yes. So, big chapter's coming up.
Well, this was also a big chapter, because we found out...
Oh, yeah. Well, I just mean, like, everything from here on are huge. Yeah.
This is a... I mean, this was... honestly, I thought that this was a big, surprising way of actually finding out who Raku had set his heart on. You know, there was no moment where he goes, "The one I love is you!" or anything. It's just...
and then, like, a fucking group of singers come out, "You're the one that I want! One day in the world!
It's just
flowers rain from the sky." He's like, "Oh, I didn't plan this. This might be bad. We should get inside."
It's just a moment where he is kind of awkward in front of Onodera, and Onodera's like, "You don't love me back." "No, I don't." And that's the reveal. It's different, and I like it. Okay. There's there is One Piece this week. I'm thinking World Trigger. I'm sorry,
yeah,
getting ahead of myself.
No World Trigger this week. Grumble.
We get a 2-page spread to start things off. Top page: Straw Hats hanging out by the beach. Nami being very suggestive. "Oh, that water bottle! I just want to pour it all on me."
Yeah, who knows if it even get any in my mouth? Who cares? Oh my god!
Oh yeah.
It's like you're not even aiming at your mouth now.
I'm not gonna swallow any of this. Just gonna let it drizzle down.
Shit, guys, my mouth's busy with all this water. Do you mind if I talk to you with my chest? I learned this from Arina. "Hey, guys! Let's go get out of this enchanted forest! Let's go!" Like, oh, God.
Chapter 832, Kingdom of Jirma. Everyone is on Whole Cake Island, lost in the seducing woods, but they haven't really realized it yet. They're still confused over some of the stuff that they've seen, like the giant half buried in the ground, like the rabbit that is pursuing them on ostrich back. I really like this rabbit, the design of the rabbit that's chasing them around.
Very, like, Renaissance, like, Three Musketeers kind of attire.
Mm-hmm. And he's also, you know, an anthropomorphic animal, but he's a lot more...
animal.
He seems... more animal and also a bit less cartoonish than the Pink Star. He was introduced as the crane rider of the Big Mom Pirates, Randolph. He's got this badass double-ended spear, too. And he starts fighting Carrot and Nami and Chopper while they're trying to get away. Luffy is still held up fighting his mirror image. And... Nami gets Luffy's attention and says, "We're gonna run back to the coast, so come on, hurry up, let's get out of here. This place is full of traps, we have to get to the exit as quickly as we can." Luffy suddenly realizes, "Wait a minute, that's not me that's following them, that's my mirror," and he tries to call out to them, but a pair of hands cover his mouth. I'm not exactly sure what happened with that, because we cut away before we get any real explanation as to what muffled him.
Yeah, I thought at first it was Nami's hands, because it didn't look like his hands, but it must be his, I guess, because even the person we see later on doesn't have hands like that. So
maybe somehow his body's being controlled, who knows? I'm sure we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, I guess if there's a mirror image, if the other one realizes what's happening, he can just silence himself or something.
I don't know. I got it. Maybe Luffy is trying to warn them, and the mirror image tries to...
The mirror image muffles himself.
Oh my god, this is so confusing.
The one that's with them is the copy. And
I know.
Yeah, Luffy's trying to warn them that, and I guess the copy...
We're going around in circles trying to figure this one panel out. Of course, we know that it's the double, and it's especially obvious because Luffy's scar is on the wrong cheek. It's a great way to... It's a nice, quick reference to tell them apart. And I think you can actually... Can you see the scar underneath his thumb? I can't tell. Fuck. So they come across the giant again after they've jumped across the collapsed bridge from before that the talking alligator ate. And so they're like, "Wait a minute, but we jumped across the bridge. How the hell did we wind up back here?" And I like how the giant is just like, "What are you guys doing back here? You ran away and then ran back up and startled me." And they're like, Okay, let's just do this again. Head in a straight line back, jump over the Crocodile River, we'll get to the coast, and, ah, why are we back here again?
Oh, did you guys come back from the Jelly Forest? Did you get anything?
I fucking hate this guy.
So Nami is looking around, really confused, and eventually she sees the trees moving around, and they're like, ah! Oh, shit. We are trees!
Yeah. Just doing tree things, like walking and being alive.
And even the entire ground is moving around, so presumably the ground just kind of rotated beneath them somehow. But they're like, well, shit, we're busted. Oh, well. And suddenly the Luffy copy grabs Nami in a chokehold from behind and says, ah, you finally realize the danger of this forest. These are the seducing woods. That's not Luffy. Who is it? And she introduces herself as Charlotte Brûlé, 8th daughter of Charlotte. Really tall, creepy-looking character. Big old nose and the scar on her face. She says, like, oh, you're so beautiful, little rabbit and a cute little girl, and seeing that beauty makes me want to tear it to shreds! Another character obsessed with looking ugly. I think we've seen, like...
Thank God Nami finally got back in the spotlight so she could be used as the damsel in distress character.
I think we've had, like...
In a creepy, almost suggestive scene.
I think we've had, like, 3-4 unattractive female characters in One Piece whose whole thing is that they're upset that they're ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it because at least Oda does draw them in a way that's not just Nami. Like, the cover of the issue this week was just Nami staring across some purple-haired Nami. I don't know who that was. I think maybe it's supposed to be someone from...
the movie?
The movie. But it's definitely just like, at least we can have differing designs in the characters, I guess, Oda doesn't try to make attractive. It'd be nice if it weren't just all hideous people, but still, I mean, One Piece has a weird style, so I guess I can at least enjoy it for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like the Brûlé thing. I do think it'd be kind of nice if they just make it like all the daughters essentially just have dessert names.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be the thing that's going on. We then cut to Big Mom's castle, and some of the members of the Germa 66 are arriving. We get a nice shot of their snail ship thing. And I like the way that they show how it docks. It kind of just pulls its head into its shell, which is also the hull of the ship, and then just kind of pulls alongside a couple of others. I like it. It looks cool. And it shows that, like, the entire island is basically made up of these interlocking floating snail ships.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
We then cut to inside, where they, you know, because we're getting this narration the whole time about, oh, you know, people around the world feel the military unit, and all of its citizens are male soldiers who endure constant, never-ending training. We get a little shot of this training field where guys are sparring with each other, and then pan up to where Sanji is observing all of them, and he's like, well, what are you doing here, sis? And he's like, well, that's a nice way to treat me. He's like, well, you're not my family anymore.
You're not my family.
I don't acknowledge anyone who would do something like this. I have nothing in common with the kind of insane people who would put up a tasteless portrait like this.
It's essentially like one step away from this dude essentially just fucking all the dead guy's wives. Like, it's just one step of tastefulness away from that.
It is a badass portrait, though.
Yeah.
So his sister is trying to talk to him and say, like, you know, come on, you're a royal. Why don't you just enjoy this? You've got 10 handmaidens hanging on your every word. And this busty chick is just like, my prince, every one of your wishes is my command. And he's freaking out over them despite the fact he's like, no, this isn't my family. And she just says, look.
Thank God, in this fucking moment, I'm like, it's Nami with Sanji's eyebrow.
It really is. And she says, you know, you've got no money issues, just, you know, enjoy this royal life. And Sanji says, look, I'm not going to get married. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to, you know, cooperate with you. But at that moment, their father enters the room. Vince Smoke Judge. Oh, you thought that Sanji's eyebrow was weird. Check out this guy's mustache. This gravity-defying mustache. Holy shit. Like, this guy must wax, right? There's no other way.
Well, I think, Nick, in my slow evolution into the ultimate hipster, this is, I think, the next style to go with. I'm already slowly completing it more and more now that I vape, of course. I don't know if you heard, but I vape now.
I heard.
Hello, Nick. Wait, nothing came out. What? It looks like a fool. Was it on? Does that have no power? There. Oh, no, if you're hard, Nick, but I vape.
We get it. We get it. So, anyhow. Judge shows up, given a full-page introduction, looking badass, looking tall. And he says, "My son." And Sanji says, "Don't talk to me! I have a father, but it's not you! You're not my real dad."
Yeah.
But Judge then says, "Did you do something to Yonji?" And you know, he's really strong. And Sanji says, "Well, I guess I'm better then." Which is really awesome, honestly. It's like, "Oh, I guess I'm better than he is if I got rid of him then."
Tell him to go fuck off. And I guess it's implying he did something, though.
Yeah, maybe beat him up and toss him over the side of the boat or something.
Kind of unceremonious all of a sudden. Yeah. Like, we haven't even known these characters. Sanji went off screen.
Judge then tells Sanji, "Come outside. Men speak with their fists." I hope he's being literal about that.
He gets out there and he's like, "Now, Sanji, you're really not letting your feelings out.
Okay.
Talk to the alligator."
"Okay, I see you're not listening here. Let's get your sister out here to be a go-between." "Okay, Sanji, you need to listen to your dad."
"Sanji, you haven't been listening to dad enough." Sanji's like, "All of my problems with women are suddenly making sense."
I hope that Judge is being absolutely literal about speaking with fists, and like he is a punching-based fighter to...
It would make sense. It would honestly make
Sanji's foot
a lot of sense, because Sanji's whole thing is, you know, not damaging his hands to cook. So if this is a dude who gave up being an assassin, who maybe has like a fist-based style... He's like, "No, cooking's more important to me." It'd be a nice little touch.
It was an alright chapter of One Piece, but, I mean...
It's fine, I mean,
very
it's fun.
Slow developments, it's all...
Yeah, this is kind of what you had to expect when we start a new arc. It's kind of nice to see the boss, essentially, of this. Judge is kind of a unique name for him, too. I think it's going to be a like fun, easy name to remember. And, yeah. I like what we got of Brulé. I think she could be a fun, cool character, too. Like, I like what we're seeing in Big Mom's group, and Randolph, I believe was his name. Actually, Carrot actually looked really awesome in this chapter, too, because she makes note, like, he doesn't know...
Oh, yeah, she attacks Randolph with lightning.
Yeah, and she's like, he doesn't know Electro, because I guess that's their the electricity thing.
So she concludes he's definitely not Mink.
Yeah, so I think that those parts are very cool.
Toriko.
I think we finish off, yeah, with Toriko.
Gourmet 379 to God. Okay, so Gigi, not Gigi, Chi-Chi, starts treating Zebra and Sunny and Coco. Good away. Starjune is fighting with Joey. They exchange some attacks, fire and slicey stuff. Starjune unleashes a really big fire attack. But Joey manages to survive with food luck, and Joey theorizes about Starjune's recently appeared third eye by saying, "Oh, maybe this. I think the space-time continuum has become distorted because of the layers of bat gel you've invoked, and you've got super awesome speed." And there's a league-long explanation about the speed of light and the gourmet clairvoyant eye, which is Starjune's power. I don't know. He can see the future and use the bat gel to move fast. Whatever. Oh my god. So much talking. So much jumping around between a bunch of stuff. Fucking Tepe gets taken out after managing to defeat one of the Blue Nitro.
Which is a huge deal. Because you remember that Blue Nitro's name, right?
Nope.
I'm like, gun to your head, Nick. What's that Blue Nitro's name? You're like, Randy? Click, click.
I forgot to load it, thank God. Toriko has landed on God. He wants to eat it. Terry confronts another of the Blue Nitro. A whole bunch of other battle wolves show up to help out as well. Meanwhile, Acacia is stuck in the back channel that the Deer King has summoned, and the Deer King just accelerates time until he has basically completely been extinguished, his appetite is completely gone, but that just causes Acacia to evolve and get a haircut! And he springs back out, blasts away all the monsters that were inside the back channel with him, and he says, I have evolved! Anyway, I've only advanced now. I'm just stronger in your, thanks to your attempt to kill me. Anyway, going over to God, stabbing Toriko through the back of the neck with my hand. Fuck you, Toriko. I'm going to eat it. That's the end of the chapter.
I do kind of like that, where he's just like, Toriko, like, finally, thank you, everybody, for your sacrifice. Let me get here. He's like, ooh, that looks good. Out of my way. Just like hand to the face. Yeah, it's an okay chapter. I'm kind of just waiting for things to settle down, because even in all the chaos, it's still, like, there's just too many characters I don't care about in things. Like, the entire Tepe part, I'm like, I just can't try to even fashion a care here.
I really flipped past it really quickly.
And there was no World Trigger, sadly.
There was no World Trigger. I was really bummed going into this, because I knew that we wouldn't have a good series to end on.
It's like, oh, let's go back and talk about My Hero again. Yeah,
I'm sure that there were more details in all of those freaking bit of character development for everyone panels. So instead, we're just going to close things out. MVPs and Series of the Week.
I give my Series of the Week to Black Clover. I thought it was a really good chapter this week. It's been a little bit of a I think I've been on a streak of Black Clover.
Yeah. Yep. This is your fourth straight week with it.
Fourth? Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Well, it can't possibly happen next week.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
It's going to just be like Asta going, I'm Asta! Asta, Asta, Asta! Desert, 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 desert!
Yeah, I'm like, oh god, this character's switching series now!
My Series of the Week is also Black Clover. Like I said many times, I have mixed feelings on the chapter, but it is undeniably the best, I think. I'm still super annoyed by Asta. I really am. But it was overall a really exciting chapter with some cool character development in it.
That's good. You'd still enjoy it. And my character of the week then would go to Finral. He had a good showing this week. It was someone who, going into this, I did not expect to get this sort of story out of him at all, and I'm really glad they gave it to him.
I'm giving it to Suyu from My Hero Academia. I like the, you know, bringing everything to a close after a whole bunch of goofed around with a moment of, oh yeah, she said something, you know, to try and stop them, and we're going to resolve that now, and character bonds and stuff like that. I really like that.
Development.
And breaking My Hero Academia's months-long streak for 3 months! The audience chose My Hero Academia without fail every single week. And breaking that streak this time is Black Clover.
Wow. It's crazy. This is unprecedented, Nick.
This is the first time that Black Clover has won our audience poll.
On the week, Annalise isn't here, too.
Yep. That's what it is. Annalise, you can't show up.
She's like, you're bad luck for your series, apparently. Despite the fact I gave it 4 weeks
ago. Chris gave it his best series. Nick gave it his best series. Audience gave it their best series. Annalise, just can't, don't show up. Don't do it. Listen to the recording afterward. That's what I do. He's going to be like, fuck you guys. And when she shows up next week, he's like, Black Clover.
The crazy thing to me is how close it was, though. My Hero was, like, nothing when I came in today. By the time we got to, like, My Hero in the recap, I was there to say, like, a comment, like, My Hero won't win the poll this week, until I looked at numbers, like, oh, no, it's still good. Oh, God. Is it going to win again?
One piece of My Hero Academia tied for a second. Good showings from those three series, definitely. Yeah, it was a better week at Jump than it was last week. Definitely, I would say. No World Trigger, unfortunately, but even Bleach wasn't as bad as it was last week. Like, the only thing that I think you could say, like, oh, this was worse than it was last week, would be Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
So, I quite enjoyed this week in manga, and I enjoyed discussing it.
Absolutely. It was a fun week.
That said, we're going to wrap things up now. So, anywho, next time we should be having Aitsu no Daihanmei, also known as his favorite, with a special guest.
Yes, Annalisa will be joining us. She helped work on the series. I think over here it's known as his most favorite.
Okay.
I think
that sounds a bit more poetic, I think.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about his most favorite next week. We'll have Annalisa on the show. And yeah, we're going to have some cool stuff coming up here. So stay tuned. Once That's Bleach gonna... finally fucking lets us know when it's going to end.
That's going to be next Wednesday on hitbox.tv/RoloT at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But just in case something unexpected occurs, he's at RoloT, I'm at Y Ruler of Time, we are at WMR Podcast. Follow those accounts so that we can let you know something unexpected came up. Yeah. Nick's computer exploded or something.
I got hit by a car, and instead of being hurt, I've actually turned into an Autobot, and I have to stop Starscream from attacking the First National Bank, which is weird. He has guns. It feels like a bank is a little low scale of a target for him, but I have to stop him.
Why does he even need money? Shouldn't he be focusing on harvesting Energon?
He's a robot. What need does he have for a paper currency? But I must do as the gift demands of me.
Check out our past episodes on Weekly Manga Recap at Podbean.com, also on YouTube. Our channel is Weekly Manga Recap. And you can also, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. Weekly Manga Recap on there as well. Be sure to leave a comment and rating so that we can beat the woodworkers in the Poppy podcasts.
Number 77 this week, Nick.
That's pretty damn good.
We're back up on top. But the only way we can stay there, the only way, is if you give 5-star reviews, guys. Without it, we're nothing. We're like the Ghost of Christmas Present in the Muppet Christmas movie. It's midnight now, and little sparkles are appearing on us as we're slowly fading away. You have to learn to accept that death comes to us all. But you can stay that death a little bit longer if you just give a 5-star review on iTunes.
Yes, you will help us out if you give us 5 stars.
Is the failing of a review.
No, no more singing.
But everyone's been demanding the musical episode of Weekly Manga Recap. I don't have iTunes. It's free. Stop saying I don't have iTunes. Like, you're like, I don't speak Spanish. How could I possibly go there and communicate? Do you have a computer? Sorry, I shouldn't be finding people.
Special thanks to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We are planning on doing Digimon commentary tomorrow evening. Mm-hmm. So join us right back here on the stream. I don't know exactly when we're going to do it. 7, maybe 8.
Sometime around there.
But we'll queue up a few more episodes, talk about that, pay very little attention to the episodes as per normal as we talk about everything else related to them. And until the giant teddy bear with eye beams comes in, that's how you hold our attention.
That's how you get it. So.
Patreon.com/weeklymangarecap if you want to help us out. And thank you to everyone who has so far. We really appreciate it.
It's greatly appreciated. Thank you.
And of course, special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our talk artist. You can check out his work in many different locations. He's got his own Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann. You can find him on newrockfanboy.deepinrock.com and a bunch of other places that he hosts his artwork at.
You can also find him in the city when it shines it, the logo for him, the Steve Mann signal, as they call it, which is actually just a pair of boobs with like a pencil on them, like drawing them. And that's when he knows that he is needed. The city needs him. Not the city that deserves him, but it's the city that needs him.
And special thanks also go out to Infamous Planet. He created this frame around you, which you see here. And he also created a special visual edition of our discussion on Murcielago recently. You can find that on his YouTube channel. And you can also find a number of other visual additions that he made on that channel as well.
Yes. Actually, we have someone in the chat asking about something, so I just want to clear this up. Will the commentaries be on YouTube or will it disappear? Our commentaries are done live here on Hitbox, but then afterwards they're put up over on our Patreon page, but it's listed as free for everybody. So you don't have to be a patron to get it. You don't even have to have a Patreon account to get it. It's just some place we kind of host them that's convenient and all-purpose sort of place to get those sort of things. So you can just find them on there.
So you can go to patreon.com/weeklymuggerrecap. And you can be a cheap motherfucker and ignore that. ignore the pledge button. But
you're like, get out of here! Push it aside. Rip it out of your computer.
But if you click on creator posts, then there are a series of ones that you will be able to access. And it's not just the commentary links. It is also our... I think we put up what... we just put Q&A on Podbean, don't we?
I put the Q&A up on our podcast feed, so right. You get it on
but
there.
All the commentary recordings are available for everyone to see if you go to patreon.com/weeklymuggerrecap, click on creator posts, and if you download the file, then yeah, you can sync them up to the episodes and watch them together with us.
Yes, and we give you like a heads up before we start, so it's not like you click play, I'm like, oh, I have to sync this up. We sync it up with you.
We actually start the episode 5 minutes in.
Yeah, it could really confuse you.
You really got to be on the ball. But that's it. That is everything. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will see you guys, those of you who show up for the commentary tomorrow, we'll see you then. And those of you who are just going to show up for the next episode, see you next Wednesday.
Yes, I'm going to be spending my week dipping my face in Rogaine so I can slowly work on this mustache. Of course, I'll be doing that in between my unicycle riding classes. Nick, I feel like Walk the Moon doesn't get enough credit. Although I really appreciated them before they got the big budget movies like Sony's Ghostbusters. No, I don't at all. I don't even really like many of the other songs I've heard. But if I do it while vaping, it sounds more intelligent.
I like how every time you puff on that, you get, like, snootier somehow.
Well, industrial revolution was neither industrial nor revolution.
Discuss amongst yourselves.
Well, I judge you and your feline intelligence. It's doubly polite because this is actually...
You're going to overdose on that, Chris.
This is Thai tea flavored, flavored as well. So it's almost like I'm sipping tea while I vape. It's a, you know, higher class thing to do, don't you know? Oh, I guess we're done now.